And welcome to this continuing podcast series from IFR Magazine, where right now you can read about G1000 traps and a blast from the past. Did you know IFR had been around for almost 25 years? Well, it has, and it's as relevant now as ever. But today we're talking about retirements of air traffic controllers. They're at an all-time high, with the number each year increasing. IFR's Jeff Van West asked both the FAA and the National Air Traffic Controllers Association to give their perspective on the situation. The FAA declined a comment, but Doug Church of NATCA had quite a bit to say on why controllers are leaving and how the FAA is trying to fill the void.
I'm speaking with Doug Church, spokesman for the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. Thanks a lot for talking with us today, Doug.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff. Thanks for the opportunity.
First, let's get a little bit of a timeline to give some context to the current situation in air traffic control. Can you give us the big picture and let's rewind to about 1981?
Well, absolutely. Following the Patco strike, the firing of the controllers in 81 sort of eradicated three generations of controllers, young, middle-aged, and those in their 50s, and replaced it with one generation. And so we knew back then that there was going to be a surge of retirements as those one-generation controllers got to the age where they could elect to retire themselves. You can retire one of three ways. One, you reach the mandatory age of 56. Number two, you reach the age of 50 if you have 20 years of experience. And number three, you reach 25 years of experience. So any way you cut it, you add 25 or 20 years to the mid-80s, and you come up with, you know, right about now, 2005 through 2010 or thereabouts. So even if there had been labor peace right now, which there's not, we still would have been facing a large wave of retirements. And that was something NACA started to speak out on as early as 1999. We knew it was coming, but then you compound that with the labor strife that has occurred, and the ultimate date that happened on that was September the 3rd of 2006, when the FAA imposed work and pay rules on the controller workforce against our will after declaring impasse at the contract table. That one act has now spurred a larger exodus of controllers who are leaving earlier than they have to. They are not waiting until they're in their 50s or even to 56. And that has created the crisis that we're in now, is controllers are leaving sooner than they have to.
We've talked to the FAA about this, and what they're saying is that it's a challenge right now, but there's nothing critical about the staffing shortage. What's NACA's opinion on this? Challenge, but stress on the system?
It's absolutely critical. All the major hubs in this country are severely short-staffed. Even if you talk about from Atlanta Hartsfield Tower to Chicago Center and Route Center, that controls the huge swath of the upper Midwest airspace, they are so short-staffed that they've had to put a functional training program in effect to try to speed up the training process for new hires that they brought in. That has led to a number of operational errors, controller mistakes. They've now reached their entire limit for what the FAA wanted for the entire fiscal year in just the first 3 or 4 months of this current fiscal year in number of operational errors. So the thing you mentioned with having talked to the FAA, they believe, of course, there's no problem because they hired over 1,800 new people last year. But I can tell you, we just completed research that's based upon FAA payroll data that we get. And of those 1,800 and change new hires that were made in fiscal year 07, only 153 have reached full certification, which goes to show that this is a long process to become a controller. It's a high washout rate right now because you've got a lot of inexperienced people that have come in without any military or collegiate background. They're pulled right off the street. But it's a long process even if you do have qualifications, on average 3 years. So we knew anybody hired last year was not going to be of any use to the system until approximately 2010. And those stats have borne out by the fact that what I just said, only 153 of the new hires have fully certified. And I'll go a step further. Almost half of those retired have yet to even complete the first of four training stages. So these people are not ready to step in yet. We don't want them to step in yet. They need their seasoning, their training. They need their time on radar position with a fully certified controller there to train them. And that's another problem. There's not enough even certified controllers to train them. At Southern California TRACON, for example, they can't even fill out a schedule without forced overtime for fully certified controllers to work today's traffic, let alone find time to try to train those who are new in the system.
NACA has some preliminary numbers on attrition. can you give me some of those numbers to give us an idea of how critical staffing is?
That's right. We've looked at the first 6 months of the current fiscal year from last October 1st through the end of March and found that 960 controllers and new hires combined, 960 have left the FAA in just the past 6 months, which if you look at what the FAA projected before the fiscal year started, it was 1,276, 1,276 for the entire fiscal year, and they've already gotten to 960 in the first 6 months. So as you can see, the level of controllers leaving the system is far outpacing what the FAA expected, and that's due to the labor unrest that is going on. Of the 960, 506 are those who retired, which is a staggering amount and, again, is beyond FAA projections. And this would be, if the projection still holds, would be the fifth straight fiscal year that the FAA has missed badly on its expectations for how many would retire. And again, this is what we predicted in 2006 when the FAA ended contract negotiations and imposed its work rules.
What was the normal retirement rate of controllers, say, before 2003?
Well, back in 2004, the FAA expected 329, but that year 362 left, so not too bad. But the next year, the FAA expected 341 would leave, but in actuality, 465 departed. These are just retirements.
Right.
Fiscal year 2006, they expected 467 would retire, but the reality was 583. And again, these are all FAA numbers from FAA staffing reports. And in fiscal year 2007, just last year, the FAA expected 643 controllers would retire, but we counted 911. So that was the greatest disparity between reality and what the FAA expected. And it all goes back to the lack of a negotiated agreement.
That you counted, there's no FAA data for that yet?
We actually do have the FAA data, but the FAA won't recognize it. We actually have the names of all 911 controllers who retired, and we've given that to media and others who have requested it. And the FAA continues to say that they only counted 828. So we do have a discrepancy there, but again, we can back up our number with the actual names, and the FAA has not.
And that's still a rapidly climbing number. I mean, a sort of going from 300 in a year to 400 to 500 to 800, even using the FAA numbers.
Absolutely, even using the FAA numbers. And again, this year we're at 506 through the first 6 months and counting. So we could eclipse 1,000 by the time September rolls around.
There are a whole bunch of programs the FAA, putting in here, working together with colleges to try and get people potentially up to speed quicker, get some of the training out of the way. Are you seeing a difference with the controllers who are coming from the college programs versus controllers who are being hired, as you said, off the street in terms of how fast they're certifying? Do you have any data on that?
Well, we're waiting for data, actually, that we hope to get sometime this year about the washout rates for a lot of the trainees that were hired last year and the year prior to see how many are still around and who they are, what kind of background they had. It would stand to reason that the washout rate for those that came through the collegiate or even the military might have a lower washout rate than those hired off the street, but we'll the statistics will have to bear that out. One thing, though, that the FAA never used to hire off the street, but they were forced to because they took everybody who was available out of the CTI schools, and they were gone. I mean, they took everybody who graduated who went into the FAA, and they still needed to hire more. And so they had to waive the requirement that you had to have a military or collegiate background and went off the street. They started advertising on city buses in Atlanta and putting announcements on over the high school intercom in South Florida. They're taking everybody who they can possibly get to come into the system so they can, put another number on the board and say, yeah, look, I hired another controller.
Now, since most of our readers and listeners here are general aviation pilots, we have some that are flying for the airlines, but for a GA pilot flying IFR around the system, I mean, how does this really affect them, in your opinion?
The Controllers Union, NACA, just 2 weeks ago, had our fourth annual awards program in Chicago where we salute the finest examples of controller flight assists over the previous year. And I bring this up because many of the nominations we get, and in fact several of the winners of this year's awards, assisted general aviation pilots who got in trouble. They were above a cloud layer where they weren't IFR certified. They had some ice on their aircraft wings and avionics, needed help getting down, or they just got lost and needed help getting to the nearest airport or had a low fuel. controllers were there to help and save the day and save their, in some cases, their lives.
Right. Those podcasts are, we actually have those up on some of the AvWeb website.
Well, I'm very appreciative of that. We certainly want to spread the word about what the controllers do to on a daily basis. I raise it because, you know, as the staffing crisis deepens and there are fewer of those experienced controllers around who know the airspace like the back of their hand, who know the terrain, know the landmarks, and as they disappear from the landscape here and they're replaced by people who are just learning the ropes, learning the system, learning the airspace, that's going to degrade the level that we can provide to the general aviation community. And it's, of course, a source of great concern to us, because that's what we're here for. You know, that's what we live to serve. But even the most mundane type of things, touch-and-go landings, practice routes, things like that at some of the smaller activity towers in the country, those kind of services are starting to be curtailed a bit because of staffing and not having enough controllers to kind of in the tower to supervise that.
Pay and benefits has been a real contentious issue. Help us out here. Let's pick a moderately busy airspace, say like a Class Charlie, Class C tower at Daytona Beach. It's not O'Hare, but there's a lot of training traffic. So it's not the top of the scale, it's not the bottom. Give us an idea of what a controller under the old contract would have made initially, and also some idea of what the work day is like.
Well, it's a complicated question, and not to dodge it, but just to point out, the pay for a controller is based upon the complexity of the traffic level that you're at, and also you know, how many years of you've been a controller. So it's different for every controller, even within each facility. The main thing that happened on September 3rd, 06, with the FAA's imposed work rules and pay band structure is that it delivered an immediate 30% cut to new hire salary. So the starting salary nationwide for all new hires is $32,000, and it's lower in places like Daytona Beach and lower activity places, and it's higher
for
people
over here.
So
that's an average.
Yeah, the average is $32,000. So what they were making before imposed work rules was about the mid-40s, $40,000 range. You don't get to move up from that level until you complete some of these developmental stages, and it's taking longer to certify, as I mentioned in an earlier question. So that prevents new hires from moving up the pay scale as quickly as they would have under the old. And a lot of the new hires, even places like Daytona, places, you know, especially in hard to hard to live places, cost of living increased places like Miami or nation's capital here in D.C. or Southern California, a lot of these new hires have to take second jobs just to make ends meet until they can get to a higher level of pay down the road. But what it also happened on September 3rd of 06 was the FAA imposed a pay freeze on veteran controllers. No more pay increases, and that even includes the yearly cost of living adjustment raise that's given to all federal employees. Controllers are the only federal employees that don't get that. So everybody's capped out. They're at the max of the pay bands. And that's a very unfair thing. And that has caused a lot of these controllers, as I mentioned, to retire when they're eligible rather than staying on closer to age 56 because there's no financial incentive to stay.
Can you give us an idea of what the working conditions are like? What is an average controller workday like? Hours, breaks? How has it changed over the years?
It remains the same in terms of an 8-hour day and a 5-day week out of 7. A lot of them work a couple of day shifts, a couple of evening shifts, and a midnight shift is a typical 5-day work week. But what we're noticing now, of course, is increased overtime usage, which can go up to 2 hours per shift for a total of a 10-hour shift. And if a manager assigns overtime on a 6th day on one of your days off, that can be a full 8 or 10-hour shift on your 6th day. You're not permitted to work all 7 days in a row. You have to have at least one off during the 7. But the time on position has increased. The goal has always been to spend 2 hours at a time on position and then be relieved by another controller and go on a break for 15 minutes or 20 or 25. Then you have a lunch break in there as well. But now, because of things being very tight on the staffing, management officials, because of what the imposed work rules in 06 gave management officials the ability to keep controllers working longer on position, keeping them maybe 2.5 hours at times. In places like Dallas Tracon, for example, they've been kept up to 3 hours at a time during busy afternoon pushes or a thunderstorm season coming up. which is very dangerous. You know, controllers, you know, it's all about focus and keeping, a high level of focus. And when you're on position too long, that starts to erode very, very tiring conditions. So the workday has become more stressful because it's really compounded the amount of things that we're being asked to do. Fewer controllers handling more traffic with fewer breaks.
All right. Thanks a lot, Doug. I appreciate you taking the time.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you so much.
And that's NADCA's Doug Church speaking with IFR's Jeff Van West. IFR Magazine for the accomplished pilot. Learn more or subscribe at www.ifr-magazine.com. For breaking general aviation news, as always, log on to www.avweb.com.